Blog Talk Radio.
Potential WikiLeaks bombshell. Now, emails reveal that John Podesta urging the Clinton camp to dump emails. Yeah, dump emails. This on March 2, 2015. The New York Times story broke the story that Hillary was using a private server that rocked their world to conduct government business, remember? That night, her campaign chair, John Podesta, wrote to Hillary's former chief of staff, Cheryl Mills, saying, quote this, "We are going to have to dump all those emails, so better to do it sooner then later." Here with us to react to all the WikiLeaks releases that we can in a very short period of time, Fox News contributor Lisa Booth. Lisa, welcome aboard.
Welcome back to tonight's show, folks. We are about 5 days out of the election, and it's pretty much neck and neck. But you know, the scandal is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And before we go on, I just want to mention on behalf of my host, Luther Mays. Luther, welcome to the show. Can we hear you?
Can you hear me?
Luther, yes, you can.
Okay, I was wondering if you could.
What a week so far. This is unbelievable. Just information, you know, is coming out on the scandal against the Clinton Foundation, and it just keeps getting worse and worse. And you know what, Luther? I'm afraid that our national security has been breached. And yes, with the whole thing coming out, and that this is not the end of it. And you know, supposedly now, with all this stuff coming out, I mean, who knows who has our information, right?
Exactly.
Before I bring on our guests, yeah, I want to mention that the show is sponsored by the 501c3 nonprofit, studentsforabetterfuture.com. Please go there and check out our website. Again, we have information on this every day. It's particularly right up to the election. And we also have internships going. So if you're in between the ages of 18 and 25, check it out on the website. And also, please don't forget to make a donation there. I would like to bring on our guest. His name is Dr. Jerome Hyler. He's author of the book Lock in America, and also a book called Everything You Have, The Case Against Welfare. Welcome to the show, Doc.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. Hello, Luther. Hello again.
How are you?
Doc, I don't even know where to start on this.
Well, let me address the concern that you raised just a few moments ago, and that is to say that James Comey himself, I believe, has just said that, this was breaking very late last night, that it is with 99% certainty the FBI can now disclose that fewer than five foreign governments, not at all friendly to the United States, in all likelihood hacked Hillary Clinton's server and is in possession of national security secrets and the highest classified top security emails that Hillary Clinton trafficked in as Secretary of State, and no fewer than five foreign governments could be expected to have hacked into her email system and be in possession of those 33,000 emails and all the information that contained therein. And that is a frightening thought indeed. Now, Hillary Clinton, all along, her defense was that there is not a shred of evidence that her email server was hacked and that any foreign government hostile to American interests is in possession in any of any such highly classified emails. And now the FBI is saying with 99% certainty, not a confirmation, but they say that any government that is in possession of that information would not announce that they possess that information or what they might have done with it or plan to do with it. So we can't confirm it by asking a government if they actually have it. They would not tell us the truth. But because of how vulnerable that information was in her server and because of what these governments do and how sophisticated their hacking operations are, it is, again, so probable, 99% certain that they were in possession of that email, and that against her defense that there's not a scintilla of evidence that any of her emails were hacked by any foreign government. As a matter of fact, she herself gave everything away when she dismissed the WikiLeaks emails as not inauthentic. Not one email that WikiLeaks divulged was denied, but her claim simply that, well, you can't take it because it was given to WikiLeaks by the Russians. So she herself is admitting that a government like Russia is actively engaged in hacking emails that have a sensitivity, and now the FBI confirms her suspicion and lets her know that against her claims that no evidence exists that any of her emails were hacked, that the FBI itself is pretty much certain that all of her emails were hacked and are in the possession of governments that are not at all friendly to the United States. That is very damning.
So they basically have all of our confidential information.
Right, including the names of agents around the world who have been acting clandestinely, who are undercover, and yet those information regarding their whereabouts, very, very possibly, that is how they learned of the Benghazi operation with Ambassador Stevens and the security detail. That they might well have learned of that operation and the places and the times and how unprotected those Americans were engaged in Benghazi, and that could have been the original source of the attack that was made against them, resulting in the death of four very brave Americans.
Well, she just don't care about what she does. She has put people's lives at risk. They're working undercover.
Well, there is a much higher purpose that that she has, and that is to get rich.
Well, she needs to be treason. She should be in jail.
I hope the FBI is
going to do something about it, because if she's above the law, there's not going to be a law in this country.
Exactly so. It could not be more dangerous. And the possibility is that from everything I have been looking into, Barack Obama is perfectly equipped to give her a blanket pardon, even if she is not arraigned, not indicted, re-interviewed. He could just give her a blanket pardon sometime between next Tuesday when the election results come in and the end of his presidency.
That's what I've been saying. He's going to pardon her. He's going to pardon everybody involved. He's going to pardon himself, and off they go.
He probably won't pardon himself, but he won't have to. If she's elected, she'll be happy to pardon him in return.
That's the
dance they'll both do. But she can, I understand, on the authority of Mark Levin, whose word I will take on this, that the pardon power of the presidency is what they call plenary. In other words, there is no constitutional limitation on a president's ability to pardon anyone, including himself or herself. But look at the scandal that will entail if the Republicans retain control of both the House and the Senate. The next 2 years, the next 3 years, will be nothing but Watergate times 50. In other words,
yep.
Impeachment proceedings will be the only thing to dance across the headlines of our newspapers for years to come.
So if she gets elected, she will be facing impeachment.
That's right.
So the message to the American people is, then why would you elect her if you want to put the country through impeachment?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
That's the message that I have to Americans.
Yes. The government would be paralyzed while this is going on. And given the nature of the scandal and the amount of information that will be divulged over the next year, 2 years, 3 years, just coming out in drips and drabs, while an impeachment movement is raised in the House and then in the Senate, there'll be no room or time to consider public policy at a very critical time in the country's history.
Well, our president, he doesn't care about our country, neither does Hillary Clinton. Their goal is to destroy this country. So, you know, we have impeachment hearings, nothing getting done. That's their goal. That makes their day.
Yeah. Well,
they're not Americans. They're against us.
Right.
What they've displayed and all the crap they've pulled is they're trying to ruin this country.
Well, yes.
If you saw
Dinesh D'Souza's recent movie, Hillary's America, it's very clear they come from the same circle of cutthroats, and that was their goal all along. It's amazing. I was on the phone with a very good friend of mine who's very astute, and we're making a list of everything President Obama has done since his election to undermine this country's interests. And the list is so exhaustive, it's incredible, in terms of domestic policy, in terms of foreign policy, in terms of executive orders. It's like there's practically nothing he did that furthered the true interests of this country or of our people. In terms of turning his back on Israel, in terms of trying to keep the Muslim Brotherhood ensconced in Egypt, rejecting Sisi's rebellion against Morsi of the Muslim Brotherhood, of doing nothing when the Iranian people rose up shortly after he was inaugurated in 2009, and the United States did not do anything to encourage or to further or to support the Green Revolution in Iran. In terms of the money that we've given to Iran, and now we just read that Iran is in the process of sending agents to the United States to disrupt this country and commit acts of terrorism. And we gave them the money to finance those operations when it was not at all necessary. On and on and on, the destruction Obamacare represents.
He wanted to be president so he could just destroy this country.
Yep.
That's what he wanted to be president for. He wanted to destroy this country, and he's been doing it.
Let me ask you, were in these emails, were there names of specific agents? Who got were exposed?
No, of course there would not be that. That information would be kept under wraps. We don't need, even if it was hacked, we don't need to assist the hackers and assist enemy governments in going any further to reveal that kind of information. But
'cause in my analogy, I have also picked up that 100 FBI were going to resign. Hadn't Comey not come forth with reopening the investigation?
Well, the way I heard it is that what finally got Comey to reopen the investigation is he said, I'm sick and tired of coming to my office in the morning and finding piles of resignation letters on my desk. So, yeah, there was a threat by many, many agents, active agents, at the expense of their careers, their pensions, and everything else, and violating anti-disclosure agreements, there was a threat that they would resign anyway and release the information they had. As a matter of fact, a lot of the information that was released was simply leaked by agents involved in the investigation through Patriots. And we can understand this because there was another case of the same thing in my state, New York. Cuomo convened the Moreland Commission to look into corruption in Albany. And just as the Moreland Commission was gathering their information ready to release the findings, he disbanded the Moreland Commission. He just said, you are no longer authorized to conduct this investigation or release any findings. The only thing Cuomo missed is that there were investigators who already had spent well over a year looking into charges of corruption, and he could disband the Moreland Commission, but that did not stop individual investigators looking into corruption to leak to the press their findings. And as a result, the majority leader in Albany and the minority leader, Sheldon Silver and Dean Skelos, are now facing serious charges and the possibility of spending the rest of their natural lives in prison. Not because of anything released by the Moreland Commission, it was disbanded, but released by individual investigators revealing the results of their investigation. And this was going to happen all over again, Comey realized, on a national scale for this administration. And he finally pulled the gun, and against all efforts of Loretta Lynch, our attorney general, to squash the investigation, he went ahead and said the investigation is open and we are looking into everything. Finally, Comey stepped up and did the right thing against direct orders from his superiors in the Department of Justice. Now, this investigation of his was so skewed that no prosecutor and Loretta Lynch herself did not allow statements under oath by those principals who were interviewed. They did not allow any search warrants, any wiretaps. They did not convene a grand jury. Comey did not have the authority to convene a grand jury to look into the results of the investigation and indict any of the principals. A prosecutor in the Justice Department had to do that, and no prosecutor impaneled a grand jury in order to hear the evidence that the FBI had gathered. So there was a thumb in the hole preventing the flood of water that was going to break through the dike, and it was done by members of the Justice Department. And so if I was Donald Trump and I won the election next Tuesday, I would appoint Rudy Giuliani, a marvelous one-time federal investigator for the New York district, to look into not only the behavior of Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, and all their subordinates, but look into to investigate the investigation itself and everything that resulted in a totally shoddy investigation, one designed to find no wrongdoing, because no search warrants, no subpoenas were issued, no grand jury was appaneled, which completely tied the hands of the FBI investigators. And if that's the case, then Loretta Lynch will be sharing a jail cell with Bill and Hillary Clinton, Huma Abedin, and the rest.
It's only our secrets that were given away to these foreign governments.
Well,
and
it was everything.
That's how Benghazi got.
Well, our own public officials don't tell the American people anything to protect this government. They've went out and they've told our enemy everything. They've left the door wide open.
That's
you don't
what
wanna,
it looks
we can't,
like. Yeah.
We can't tell the people what's going on because we're jeopardizing the security of this country. What they have done is they're like spies. They're not even for this country. They're putting us under jeopardy here. You know,
that was true right from the very beginning.
Yes.
From the moment that Barack Obama entered the White House and sent the bust of Winston Churchill back to Britain and said, keep your damn gift, it was obvious that the President of the United States did not have the best interests of his own nation at heart. Because the United States is illegitimate, according to the political left. Profit is illegitimate. Capitalism is illegitimate. Private property is utterly illegitimate. The state owns everything. These are pure collectivists.
Yeah. Yes, communist.
Not necessarily communist. The best term to use really is collectivist. And the totalitarians, whatever label you give them. In other words, there are specific points to the Marxist program. Adolf Hitler wasn't a Marxist. He was a totalitarian. Mussolini was not a Marxist. He was a fascist. He was a totalitarian. And the democratic socialists, like Obama, they basically have souls of totalitarians. They have souls of despots, whatever you call their ideology. And that is statism or collectivism.
Yeah, I want to ask you, what's the difference, the stark difference between a fascist and the communist?
A communist believes that all the lives, the liberties, and the possessions of every citizen belongs to the state, and it's for the state to decide who gets what and who can do what. Now, a fascist believes the same thing. The fascist would allow private families to marginally own their properties, own their companies. In other words, in the late 20s, when Hitler was rising to power in Germany, there was a fierce battle between fascists, who eventually became the Nazis, and communists. And the reason, or one of the chief reasons why the fascists, the Nazis, won out, is that they went to the industrialists, the wealthiest families in Germany, like the Krupps and everything, and the makers of Mercedes-Benz and on and on and on, and they said, if the Marxists come to power, they will seize your property. We will allow you to keep your property. And it was Hitler who gained the backing of these wealthy industrialist families just on the basis that they will at least be able to keep and continue to run their companies, their industries. But they didn't realize quickly enough that, yes, marginally they may still own and run their factories and manufacturers and everything, but they will be forced to do exactly what Hitler tells them to do, just as if the communists, not the Nazis, came to power.
And right now, there's this history repeating itself.
That's all history does. History is just nothing but one damn thing after another.
Yeah.
There is nothing new under the sun. What happened a thousand years ago in any circumstance will happen a thousand years from now in the same circumstance. And
people
by the way,
wake up and open theirs.
The objective is always, like Rahm Emanuel said, to create crisis. Because any despot, any tyrant knows that crisis is the catalyst of change. Create a crisis. Undermine the country. Raise taxes, impose regulations ad infinitum, have something like Obamacare, undermine the country's prosperity, put the country in poverty, and the people will appeal to anyone who can save them from what the government itself is doing, including support the same government that is doing it to them because with a media that is entirely owned by the leftist mentality, they will go along with what the government is doing and not inform the people. And Doreen, as you well know, it all starts with the education system. Control the education system, indoctrinate the centers of indoctrination, make sure every teenager has free access, a tuition free for all. Just get them into the centers of indoctrination, and when they come out, they'll be helpless to reverse the terrible trend.
Oh, well, that's right. And one of Hillary's thing was to promote free higher education.
Precisely, to get every teenager a tuition-free education, which to her is nothing but indoctrination. And as we said before, it is the college professors who put into the world the next generation of teachers, of journalists, of judges, of playwrights, of movie producers, who disseminate the propaganda on which tyranny rises. There we are.
Going back to the education system, I guess my question is, suppose I have somebody who, he doesn't want to go to a college, so why should he have to foot somebody else's tuition bill?
Because of the principle of collectivism. Who is he to stand against the interests of the people, the interests of the country, when the country's is indoctrination? And that's the mentality we are fighting.
That's what the collectivist would say.
Exactly.
It is his right. It is his right to choose to not to go, or her right to choose to not to go. Suppose they just wanted to go to school to become a plumber, you know what I'm saying? Or they get a job right away somewhere.
Well, that's exactly what collectivism destroys. There are no individual rights. There are only collective rights. There's the right of the collective to order any number of citizens to do what's necessary to achieve the collectivist's goal of tyranny, of despotism.
And two, on that note, and I know this from being a teacher, students, work at different paces. You have some students that work harder, some that just don't, and those students that excel and want to work harder, they should, be compensated for it. And if they're working for it, and they learn to work for their money, then, that money is theirs, and they shouldn't have to pay, they shouldn't have to foot the bill for somebody else's higher education.
This is the thinking of an individualist. No collectivist would stand for it.
Believe me, you do not have what it takes to become
a teacher in a collectivist.
I will not become a collectivist.
Oh, I'm confident of that.
You know that? I am an individualist.
Yeah, exactly. From the collectivist standpoint, you have nothing to offer society. From the collectivist standpoint. As a matter of fact, your views have to be completely suppressed. And mine. That's what we have to warn the American people against.
And that's why I keep telling everybody. I said, we are an individual. We all have individual strengths, and that's what God made us, He didn't make two people the same.
Yeah. Now,
so we should rely on what we do best.
Is what works. Individualism, which leads to capitalism, leads to, yes, an inequality in the division of wealth, as there's an inequality in the division of labor. But, again, here's where Hillary Clinton goes completely wrong when she accuses Donald Trump of his trumped-up, trickle-down economics. and she blasted him all through the campaign, all through the debates, for his commitment to trickle down, help the rich, and somehow the middle class and the poor will benefit. What Donald Trump should have but neglected to answer is that trickle down works every single time it's tried. I would invite Hillary to count the number of jobs created by Andrew Carnegie and Thomas Edison and Henry Ford and Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and even Donald Trump. These are the people in a free country who become super wealthy by benefiting everyone, by creating new jobs, creating entire new industries. But you have to leave. But for the collectivist, for the statist, all that represents is not the triumph of industry, the application of science to improve the quality of life for everybody. All that represents for the soul of a collectivist and a statist is it results in inequality. And inequality is unfair and unjust on the face of it. They don't explain why or how. They just say one man should not have 5 or 10 or 20 times the wealth of someone else. That is prima facie unjust, and that's what they will do away with. Everyone has to do the same, even though it means nothing but the spread of poverty throughout society by harnessing the energies of our most productive and creative entrepreneurs. They don't care about that. Everyone has to be equal, and of course, the equality makes anyone in the government and anyone who contributes to the collectivist goals, they're the ones who gather the wealth in corrupt fashion. And that explains
everything.
Hold on,
Doc. We have a caller. Yeah, we have a caller on the line, caller 404, area code 404. Would you like to ask a question?
Yeah, I have a few. Can you guys hear me well?
Yeah.
Yes,
I can hear you.
Go ahead.
Okay. The first one would be in saying that individualistic mind state, no matter what, that's the answer. All collectivism is bad. At what point are we talking about a situation where it's a territory of individuals, or are we talking about a nation state? Are we actually talking about having a government when you follow that logic to its final conclusion? Next point, era.
Can we respond to that first point?
I got a few. If you allow.
Okay. That's fine. We'll be happy to entertain them all. And the first question.
Don't entertain
well
me. Let's have a conversation. Don't entertain. Let's have a conversation.
Go ahead. Go ahead, caller 404 asked.
No, thank you. The second part would be the robber baron era that he's talking about, the Carnegies and, the Vanderbilts and all of these different people. The issue is not inequality in itself and saying inequality is bad and it shouldn't happen. No, you'll find that in every society. The question is inequality being artificially trumped up by people who have way more influence in government and way more influence on the levers of power? That's how we saw Rome fall and, the majority of empires you can kind of think of. So it's not just as simple as putting it out there of saying some people say inequality is bad. We say it's good. No, it's a question of are we allowing one group of people to determine not only the nation but determine who's winners, the status of winners and losers within a nation. So with a country with 5 million homeless, I do think we are kind of reaching unprecedented levels of inequality, and I do think it is being dictated by one group of folks. If you're doing it on your own merits, that's
right,
a whole other story.
Okay, I would
right,
like
okay,
to address
hold on, let's
all of that.
Respond. Go ahead.
Caller, you raise incredibly important objections, not to individualism, but objections to what took place in our history. To answer your first question, in my opinion, government has but one purpose, to protect all in the enjoyment of their rights, to be a protector but not a provider. And that's exactly what the founders tried to create in drafting the Constitution, in rebelling against England, but they failed. Those founding principles that guarantees equality under law to all never survived the founding era. And what you say is precisely true. Throughout the entirety of American history, there were not, you can't call them capitalists. I call them counterfeit capitalists. And they were some of our most famous, quote, robber barons, unquote. They did not take risks in the market, but they ran to government for special benefits, privileges, immunities, subsidies, protective tariffs, land grants, on and on. And the crazy thing is that it was precisely government giving in to these privileged counterfeit capitalists that sparked economic growth for a period, but eventually all the government wound up doing is building up bubbles that burst. And when the bubbles burst, the country fell into panic and depression, and millions suffered for it. It was a corruption of our principles, because when government conferred special benefits on some, it simultaneously denied equal protection under law to all. If we had remained a true laissez-faire economic system, then the growth might not have been so spectacular as it was. Government was able to spur bursts of economic growth, but all it did was build up artificial financial bubbles. And when the bubbles burst, like they did in 1837, 1857, 1873, 1893, and 1929, and a few in between, the country fell into hardship and suffering, and it was precisely the result of the compromise with the founding principles and the corruption of our political system caused by what I call counterfeit capitalists, who did not want to make their money and take the risks in a free market, but they wanted guaranteed riches, and they bought state legislatures and the national government in order to get their way. So here's what I say, and this is a theme of an entire book that I did. It's not published yet, but it was precisely the periodic crises caused by corporate welfare, crony capitalism, that created the, quote, need, demand, and excuse for social welfare reform. And that's the thrust of what you're saying, that you can't allow your claim is that you can't allow individualism, and not just because it results in unequal wealth, but because people fall by the wayside as a result of the suffering that's created. And that's exactly right. So anyone who was interested in the founding principles and interested in a society that remains true to the principle of individualism has to rail not just against the social welfare state, but the corporate welfare state that created the excuse for social welfare reform from the progressive era to the New Deal to the Great Society and to Obamacare. Do you appreciate the thrust of that?
I think we're hit.
Just speaking for myself, you and I can lock hands in criticizing the corruption that overcame American government that was sparked by the so-called capitalists themselves, who had no interest in individualism. They wanted government, they corrupted government so they could themselves get the wealth. And it worked over and over again, and the country paid a horrible price for it. And what then happened is from socialists and collectivists who wrote the history of this country, they did exactly what you did, blamed the robber barons, blamed the greedy capitalists, blamed greed and profit and capitalism for all of the suffering that befell the country when it was just the enemies of individualism, people who ran to government believing that government had an authority to tax the people and give them the benefits in a corrupt manner. It corrupted the politics of the country and destroyed the economy of the country over and over again. I wish my book wasn't
print. Right. I think we get to the same place, but I think where we split paths is I believe you think the founders wanted things in a different fashion. I believe that was the ideal since inception. You go back to James Madison, we must protect the minority of the opulent from the majority, anti-democratic from the beginning, thinking of, on a class level, certain groups should not only be protected, but their interests should lie with the rest of everyone else after they decide what it is. So I think we have that fundamental difference. And then as far as individualism, I believe everybody, yes, you should have your individual freedoms and rights and ability to kind of, you know, water what talents you have, no question. But I do think there is something about a society, and there's something about saying that you're a nation. There's something about an ideal that everybody's kind of putting their five in to take it to church, so to say, when you pass the plate around to get big projects done. And I think the big projects in America have been done from that kind of identity. So, you know, we part on some issues, we agree on some.
No, but
and I'm one of those people.
Real quick.
I'm one of those people who every time somebody says big government is the problem, I say, yes, I agree, but big corporations are the problem, too. We have to. We drown one,
problem,
and that solves it. They both have to be drowned simultaneously.
My answer is that the power of big corporations to influence big government has to be stopped. Government has to be stripped of the power to enrich some Americans, namely the most well-connected and corrupt. Government has to be stripped of the power to benefit those corrupt and well-connected individuals at everyone else's expense. And also, your reading of James Madison, and by the way, this was the subject of my doctoral dissertation, so I'm quite familiar with what took place in the earliest years of the founding, and I'm certainly familiar with James Madison. What he was objecting to was the power of democratic majorities to ride roughshod over the rights of other citizens. In other words, what the founders had to contend with is the fact that well-connected, corrupt interests always went to government to benefit themselves at others' expense. But at the same time, democratic majorities, and this was taking place in all of the states, that's what eventually led to the Constitutional Convention, democratic majorities were passing laws to take the wealth of the wealthy into their hands by destroying the sanctity of property and contract. And there were a lot of specifics. So James Madison was neutral. He wanted the government to protect all Americans in the enjoyment of what's theirs, giving them the right to gain, keep, use, trade, or dispose of their freely acquired possessions, but not to run to government to take the possessions of some to benefit them, whether it's a aristocratic minority of capitalists or whether it's a democratic majority. No one should have the power to use the instrumentalities of government to benefit some at others' expense. And the only way to do that is to see that government is a protector of all and not a provider of some, which can only provide at the expense of others.
Like the post I put out a couple years ago with Doreen.
Yes, go ahead, Luther.
Well, the post I put out a couple of years ago was this: the corporations go overseas to third world countries to get third world labor. It's called the triple up effect. Bring the money back in and not get taxed on it. It's a triple up effect nowadays. It ain't the triple down effect to the people. The government's got too much control and getting paid off to let this go on. That's a triple up effect where this does not. It doesn't. That's why this country's destroyed. You're supposed to triple down. The triple down effect is to help the people.
Well,
that's not what's going on.
The root of the problem, the way I understand it, is that government makes it so onerous, so costly, so expensive to conduct business in the country that
companies run for their lives
to avoid it. It is not just a search for cheap labor overseas. It is a desire
to
escape the welfare state, which takes so much in taxes, imposes the high cost of complying with an avalanche of regulations, industry by industry, agency by agency.
The government run the corporations out of here because they're getting overtaxed.
Yes.
Exactly.
And I say this about Hillary Clinton's plan to dramatically raise taxes on the rich. She can raise taxes on the rich, but if she wants to attract more revenue, she's going to have to close the borders to prevent the wealthy from leaving the United States, preventing more corporations from leaving to escape for their lives from the burden of the taxes she's going to impose. And all she wants to do is open the borders.
Right, to wreck the country.
Yeah.
And that will wreck the country.
And as the caller intimated, it will wreck the country, and Hillary Clinton and her minions will blame the very people who they're driving out of the country for the country's woes and the suffering of the people. They will have caused the corporations to leave and then bitch and moan about all the jobs that have been lost because the corporations are so greedy they won't employ Americans.
But when did it really start getting bad? Back in the 80s when the big corporation car companies left this country. When they left this country, this is when it started.
It wasn't in the 80s and it wasn't even in the 90s when the economy of the country boomed. Unemployment was lower than any economist ever believed unemployment could be. During the Reagan era, when Reagan cut taxes successfully, and when Bill Clinton also opened up trade and continued with additional tax cuts, nobody complained. It was good times. It was boom time in America. It was later on when Bush reneged on his pledge, read my lips, no new taxes, and the Democrats got him to raise taxes. And that's when everything started. And then with the environmental groups taking control of Congress and imposing more and more onerous regulations on the energy industry and OSHA and on and on and on, the exodus began.
You got no tax breaks for the big three. You got unions just nailing them.
Right.
So what do you think they're going to do? They're going to find a way out of here.
Exactly.
And that's exactly when this country started going downhill. Good paying jobs. When they started leaving here, the good paying jobs started disappearing.
It's absolutely
terrible what started here. But I knew when I was 17 years old, when that started going on, I said, I'll be lucky if I could support myself, I said to myself. And now I'm sitting here 36 years later on a radio discussing what I see coming. I've seen it coming.
And the travesty, the horrible travesty, is we blame capitalism and we blame the capitalists and we call them robber barons for simply looking out for their own interests when we are making it impossible for them to pursue their interests and stay in the country. That's the sick irony of this whole thing, and it is the horrible miseducation that the colleges are offering in blaming capitalism and blaming the institution of private property and profit and inequality. They are doing exactly what they're complaining about and blaming the people who simply are responding to what they're doing for making life hard in America when it's they themselves.
We don't take the power away from the liberals. This country's here. This country's done if we don't get the power away from these liberals.
It's not the liberals.
But it's even some Republicans too, Luther.
Oh yeah. Oh sure. They're bought in. Yeah. So it's a love of money.
The first battle that has to take place is exactly what Bernie Sanders and Ted Cruz and Donald Trump said it was, the establishment. What has to be done over the next few years, what needs to be done in terms of leading up to the 2018 midterm elections, is to show the establishment polls of both parties the door and build a tidal wave of what I call Tea Party patriotism to reinstate the founding principles and get the corruption out of government. And Donald Trump said it well, drain the swamp.
Right, and put all new people in.
Yes.
Get rid of the corruption. Vote these people out. Get united and get rid of these people.
Yeah.
We got to work together to get rid of this problem. We have to vote these people out.
Did you take note that the governor of Ohio wrote in John McCain?
Right.
To be his candidate.
Yeah.
Kasich.
Yeah. But in the meantime, John Kasich, that's exactly what he wrote in. And he couldn't even do that because John McCain was not on the Ohio ballot. He wrote it in, and it doesn't even count as one vote for McCain because he wasn't on the ballot in Ohio. But in the meantime, Ted Cruz now is campaigning all over the country with Mike Pence in support of Trump, the Trump-Pence ticket. And that is why Texas is going overwhelmingly now, finally, for Donald Trump. When 2 weeks ago it was thought that Texas was a toss-up.
Yes, and I want to bring that up with the election. My concern with this is the battleground states, because that's the Electoral College.
I think Donald Trump
would have the popular vote, but you have to get the electoral vote to win.
Exactly.
Well, like someone told me today, call your congressman. Call your congressman. But if you call your congressman, he's not going to come to the vote. He's not going to call you back.
Right.
Yeah, Jeb Bush did not come out and support Trump.
That's right. Well,
or at least I don't know that yet.
Well, Trump savaged Jeb Bush, absolutely savaged Jeb Bush. The Bush family will never, ever forgive him for turning Jeb Bush into a dunce in front of the entire country at the first few primary debates. The Bush family are no patriots. And Ronald Reagan's biggest mistake, he made two very large mistakes. His biggest mistake was selecting as his heir apparent, as his running mate in 1980, a man who called his economic plan voodoo economics from the start.
Right. He picked him to win the election.
Yeah, right. But the principle that Reagan neglected is that it is not enough to adopt the right principles. Once adopted, they must be adopted as unbreachable absolutes. In choosing a man who knew nothing about economics and the free market, namely George Herbert Walker Bush, Ronald Reagan sunk his own principles, even though, as you say, Luther, it might have been the only way for him to win the election. But that isn't true either, since he won in a landslide against Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter
right.
was such an absolute disaster.
Right. Well, the thing about the contrary is you.
I'm sorry?
Yeah.
The contrast
go ahead, Luther.
Go ahead. Well, what I would bring up here is the contrast.
All
that stuff about Ollie North and all that. Reagan let Bush run the foreign affairs. This Noriega stuff and the sex kids and these kids using these senators and stuff going down there picking kids to have sex with and all this stuff. Reagan, I believe, let Bush run these foreign affairs. We had all these problems. He was blinded to all this.
Reagan was concerned with rebuilding our military after it was decimated under Jimmy Carter. He was concerned with cutting taxes and restoring the economy, and he achieved those goals. And his Vice President Bush was intimately acquainted with foreign affairs, having headed the CIA and everything.
Right.
And it wasn't necessarily wrong, especially when Reagan's concern was in rebuilding the American economy, creating jobs, restoring prosperity to the country, which he did after 2 years of having to weed the horrible inflation Jimmy Carter created. Took 2 years to balance supply and demand, and the economy boomed. For almost 20 years, the economy boomed during the Clinton years, because Bill Clinton didn't do very much to inhibit economic growth. He continued and even built on the free trade legacy of Ronald Reagan. But for the election now, as you say, Doreen, it's all in the hands of the Electoral College. And because a few states have such great populations, that gives electoral votes to Hillary Clinton, California, Oregon, Washington, New York, Massachusetts, New Jersey. She's already so ahead of the game. And as Sean Hannity's been saying, if he's going to win, Donald Trump is literally going to have to run the table and turn traditional Democratic states like Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, turn some of those states if he's going to reach the magic number of 270 electoral votes, which it now seems that Donald Trump is poised to do.
He's got Michigan,
right.
He's got Wisconsin, he's got Minnesota. People are not Democrats here anymore.
Scott
people have been suffering too long.
Yeah. If John Kasich had given Donald Trump a solid support, then and Trump didn't have to spend so much in order to win Ohio, which it looks like he's going to win. He could have devoted more campaign resources into Pennsylvania, which he also needs very desperately. John Kasich,
a traitor.
He really is. And I don't understand it, because while Donald Trump certainly savaged Jeb Bush in the primary, he did not go after Kasich. He did not make a fool out of John Kasich. I have no idea what animates Kasich to be so opposed to Donald Trump.
Right, because Trump was dependent on him. He didn't want to tear him apart. He needed his state. Kasich's not in the ball game here.
Yeah,
he's
I'd like
not
to
helping.
Think that Trump was thinking that far ahead. But, you know, we have he did a lot of crazy things that hurt him early on until he, you know, just got his feet planted the right direction.
Right, started learning.
Right.
Ryan didn't do him any good either.
Paul Ryan finally did endorse him.
Oh,
late
I missed
game,
that.
Yes.
He did
come out.
He
yes.
sure did a lot of damage before he did it.
Exactly. And that was also very costly.
He could have made
Trump's life
pay. These people have to have hell to pay after this election. These people that
sure
did that.
Do.
Oh, yeah.
Paul
and John
Ryan
John Kasich is dog meat for the Republican Party, who now realizes how imperative it is to put Donald Trump in the White House. And someone like Kasich, who stood in the way and still stands in the way, he has no future in the Republican Party.
Oh, he's done. No doubt about it. They're done. Yeah. He's definitely done. It's just unbelievable,
yeah.
These two parties. They're not Democrats. They're not Republicans no more. They're the double-headed snake with a handshake.
Yeah.
That's exactly what's going on here.
Yeah. You have to understand, the establishment is beholden to their special interests, the special interests that keep them in power and give them the contributions, and that's also collectivism. It's pure corruption.
It is.
But,
right.
Okay, guys, we're running out of time, so I have to wrap up. And by the way, tomorrow night we're having on Dr. Saeed. He is a professor in Middle Eastern studies. He's going to explain the connection of the Clinton Foundation and receiving money from the Saudis. Great topic tomorrow night. And Dr. Heiler, you're welcome back anytime.
Okay, thank you.
For great conversation.
It'd be a privilege to have you back.
And don't forget, to go on. Do you have a website, Doc?
I do, but best for anybody to go on my Facebook page, and the last name is spelled, first name is Jerome, J-E-R-O-M-E, last name is spelled H-U-Y-L-E-R, and there are plenty of postings there which express some of the views that I outlined in this conversation this evening and go well beyond to how to save the country, in my view.
Okay, and folks, thank you very much,
Doc. God bless you.
Don't forget, he's the author of the book, Everything You Have, The Case Against Welfare and Lock in America. And folks, we are out. Stay tuned for tomorrow night when we bring Dr. Saeed, and have a great night.